Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from the people who know. Each week I'll speak to a new guest with an inspiring job. We talk to photographers, writers, clinical scientists, personal assistants, you name it. We hear about their personal paths to doing what they do, the skills required, and the tools they use for the job. I am Laura Leoncini, and today my guest is Dr. Gerald Edwards, chiropractor in Los Angeles. What is chiropractic? What's the difference with other practices such as osteopathy? What is the relation with classic medicine, and where is the research leading this field? All questions I'll be exploring in the next 25 minutes with my guest. Dr. Edwards, thank you so much. It's so funny the way that we met, because through a common friend that I met in Los Angeles, and she said, oh, I should ask my chiropractor to be interviewed at for Job Tales. So here we are. Thank you so much. I would like to know from you, what does chiropractic mean?
Thank you for the invitation.
And pleasure.
To our mutual friend, who is a very lovely, lovely person.
Yes, she is.
So with respect to what is chiropractic, it is the by the hand. Mm. So chiropractic is a form of natural healthcare in which we put the hands on the body and we move the tissues, muscles, tendons. But most people think of chiropractic as moving the joint, and you can hear that crack or that pop sound.
Which also is part of your job, right? I mean, the cracking, what we call, you know, in layman, cracking.
Yes, and it's becoming more and more popular. I actually call a lot of patients crack addicts.
Crack addicts.
They really, if they don't get that thunderous crack, somehow it hasn't been delivered correctly.
Yeah. And has chiropractic been there for a long time? Like, has it been a practice for many years?
Oh, yes.
Decades?
Over 100
centuries?
Years. Yes.
Ah, okay. Yes. Okay. So when you were a child or a young man trying to decide what to do with your life, did you have that in mind already?
No, not really. My journey into chiropractic was due to an injury. And I had injured my back, and I was a competitive tennis player wanting to further my career in tennis. And through standard medical practice, the solution was to have spine surgery. And at the pleadings of my grandmother, God rest her soul, she told me about chiropractic. And up to that point, I couldn't even spell it, if you will, or knew anything about it. So, and I was at university at UCLA, so I started chiropractic care. And within 4 months, I was virtually pain-free. And that absolutely startled me. And that's what started me to investigate chiropractic as a profession.
Didn't have to do surgery then?
No, not at all.
Wow. So it did save a lot about about your back.
Yes.
So that was it. And how old were you? Sorry for me asking.
No, I was 19.
Oh, so young. Okay.
Yes.
So once you found out a bit more about chiropractic, then you decided that you may want to do that as a profession?
Yes. So concurrently at university, I was moving into a track of healthcare looking at medical school.
Okay.
And during that time, I had transitioned and I was an EMT working in an ambulance. I was a medic in the back. Mm. So I was able to see a lot of hospitals and injured individuals. And I really concluded that that wasn't the life that I wanted to lead. It looked as though they were very drawn out, very rewarding career, I'm sure. But they were on call 24/7 at that time, the pagers and the amount of time. And coming off of competitive sports, I was a little cantankerous and nobody was going to tell me what to do. And I kind of wanted to work for myself.
So healthcare was in your radar. And then with chiropractic, you saw a better fitting, you know, in terms of time and you know, the life management than maybe becoming a medical doctor. Is that right?
Absolutely true. I have a deep appreciation for the medical practice, But I was always the child of growing up saying, well, why don't we have chicken soup to prevent the cold as opposed to treat the cold after you get sick? How do we prevent something?
So when I think of chiropractic, of course, you know, the cracking, of course, yeah. And then sometimes it you can hear it so much that you think that your spine is going to break in two, but then you feel much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're, especially on the neck side, and you're really scared when the, you know, someone touches
There's a lot
neck.
Of trust.
Yes, exactly. A lot of trust. And then, you know, I think also of other practices like osteopathy. And sometimes even when I have my own back problems, I say, okay, which one should I go to, you know, osteopathy and chiropractic? Can you tell me the difference between the two approaches?
Yeah, it's a good question. Here in the United States, osteopathy is still a very major player in the healthcare marketplace. They are traditionally trained physicians that provide, you know, medication and surgeries. But they're also trained in manual medicine, the adjusting of the joints, if you will. But in my observation, the greatest change is most osteopathy practitioners do not perform manual medicine any longer. They perform standard medical care. You see them as emergency room physicians or cardiologists or neurologists. They know about it, but they don't practice it. So if somebody was trying to choose somebody as a provider to manually manipulate them, if chiropractors, this is all that we do versus somebody who's dabbling in internal medicine and family practice, so they might not have their hands on that many patients adjusting their spines.
And then I'm thinking of another one, the physiotherapist, you know, and then the sports therapy. And is there a parallel with chiropractic? Are they complementary? Or what's the difference?
I think there's a tremendous amount of overlap and complementary pieces. With the manual manipulation or the adjustments, you really need to be exercising and you need to be getting stronger and more flexible. And in most chiropractic practices, we don't have the space or the facilities to have all the equipment. So we'll typically refer out for continued co-management of that individual for strengthening purposes.
I see. So when, you know, going back now to your, you know, personal life and when you started, you know, did you have to go to medical school? How many years did you study? Because I'm sure that the listeners, especially the young ones, are thinking, okay, this speaks to me, you know, no like 24-hour job, having a contact with the body, with the patient. But then how much do I need to study and what's out there for what do I need to expect in terms of curriculum?
You need to go to university and get your 4-year degree. And I strongly suggest individuals going into some sort of the sciences. And then you enter chiropractic school, which is a graduate program. If you go through the summer, so there's no break, it will take you 3.5 years. If you take a normal course, it'll take you 5 years.
Okay.
And then once you get out, you have to pass the national boards. And then once you pass your national boards, you then can take your state licensure exams. And then after that, me personally, I went back and got my postgraduate degree in neurology, which was an extended 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Out of your own initiative, you didn't have to, right?
Correct. Correct.
And what is the link, neurology and chiropractic, for you?
Well, chiropractic is we are the study of the nerves. In osteopathy, that's the science of the blood system. And in homeopathy, that's the science of similars. And in allopathic medicine, that's the science of opposites. So if you have an infection, we'll give you an antibiotic. If you're hot, they'll cool you down. Homeopathy is a little bit different. They may want to give you a very, very small low dose of the irritant to help your body encourage to heal. In chiropractic, we're talking about nerve function. And the more I got into looking at what chiropractic was doing, we had to end up in the spinal cord and then ultimately into the brain. And studies are showing very tremendous activity in the brain after a spinal adjustment.
Oh, wow.
And to understand that link gives the ability to deepen your examination and provide more direct specific care to that individual.
Oh, fascinating, yeah. I want to get back to that about the future and where the research is leading. When you did your studies, so you mentioned before that you wanted to be independent. Now, what are the options a young man or young woman has after graduating and becoming a chiropractor?
I would strongly recommend somebody going into being an associate or going into an organization to learn the field, because probably in any industry, when you get out and you start working, what you learn in school and what's really happening on the street are two different things.
Yes, I
and agree. I've been in practice now going on 31 years. Well, because of my competitive nature as an athlete prior, I went out and just opened my own shop. I got lucky, but I wouldn't recommend that. I would say spend 3 to 4 years learning the business, learning how to treat patients, how to manage your schedule, how to deal with patient management, and then co-management with other professionals. And then if you want to strike out on your own and be a solo practitioner, then you can do that.
Do you think it's harder to have that learning curve if you're independent from the get-go?
I think that it's a different learning curve. If you were to first start off in practice, you don't know if you're making any mistakes, because there's nobody else to bounce any information off of. And your lease payment is due on your rental, on your office, and you have to pay employees. So there becomes this conflict between how much you want to continue to learn, but you have to keep your doors open.
Sure. And in what way would you say that you were lucky? Can you define luck in your case?
Lucky was when I started gathering patients right away. And at that point, I was making money to not only keep the doors open, but put money in my pocket. And then I started getting interested in furthering my education in terms of what was happening with the brain and the spinal cord. Why was I seeing these results or different results? And then from a personal note, one of my siblings has a psychiatric disorder, and I got more interested as to asking the question, well, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have a brain that may not be working optimally? And how could I not only understand it, but potentially have an influence in a positive direction?
So yeah, that's very interesting, because I can see, you know, there can be many paths to, you know, and in terms of also learning from mistakes and, you know, having a voice on the side that tells you, okay, no, this is right, or no, that's wrong, go rather that way. Now you've been, you know, 3 decades in. For a pearl of wisdom, let's say, for the young listeners, is there something that you've learned in the past that you would do different today if you had known it back then?
That's a great question. If I was to speak to my younger self, I would say have more humility, because you're walking around with a title of being a doctor and people are giving you these accolades and you're making money. But really, it's in terms of being in service to somebody else. And when you start to become in service of somebody else, you start to listen differently to what the patient is telling you. Because the reality is, in any sort of healthcare, I see this in three prongs. In any human being in any condition, 1/3 of us is mechanical, 1/3 of us is chemical, and 1/3 of us is emotional. And they have a tremendous overlap. So being able to spend the time to ask the proper question and listen without judgment as to what the individual is saying, so we can offer advice or refer them to the proper person for care.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that it must be difficult sometimes because you come with your own set of, you know, stereotypes or prejudices, or let's say like ways that you think you can fix that person or that you can, you know, treat that person. Have you found it difficult or easy in your life, in your professional life, to listen with no judgment, to listen to your patients?
It took me a long time, and it's a continual learning. But part of what I consider myself is a professional listener, because studies will basically show about 60 to 70% of the diagnosis and treatment will be given to you by the patient if you know how to interview them properly.
Right.
And if you listen, because they know what's going on with them. They just may not understand the Latin of it, but that's not their job. Our job is to listen and ask the appropriate question, as opposed to going in with a preconceived notion as to what is happening. As an example, if a woman comes in and she's having neck pain. And the number one of the very common metastatic cancers from breast goes to the neck. So we have to be aware of a lot of other systems as opposed to thinking always, oh, this individual has neck pain. I do manual medicine. I can fix you. When in reality, it could be coming from a completely different system.
Hence also the relationship also with other medical sectors.
100% true. Okay. 100% true.
Do you have, we're talking about before about myths about the job. So can you tell me a couple of myths, one or two myths about your job as a chiropractor?
I think really a lot of people in the, you know, maybe not one standard deviation, but there's many people that think that chiropractic is a myth. How can me putting my hand on you and thrusting with some level of force, getting a crack, elicit a health change? And unfortunately, a lot of chiropractors believe that as well. And they've lost, in my opinion, that sense of curiosity and wonder about the science of it all and how the human body operates and what does it mean to be human. So studies have shown that getting your neck adjusted in the high up, you know, just below your skull, if you get it done correctly, you can actually improve high blood pressure. The blood pressure goes down. So it's natural and it's non-medicated. Now, that is a very high technical skill, and you have to select that patient as opposed to the myth of like, oh, just get adjusted. Let me see as many people as I can. Put my hands on people and just start cracking spines like two guys in a gym. You see often just cracking each other all over the place. And so it isn't a magic bullet. There is real science and real neurology and real hormonal influxes after getting adjusted. So people really think that what we do is kind of magical, and it really isn't. It isn't magic. It's not a belief system.
Right, right. There's science behind, right? And it also, I can think that it must be a continuous research and study because it evolves with time, right? Do you need to like to go to conferences or, you know, refresh, yeah, your skills?
Yeah, every year we have a mandatory 24-hour continuing education, and you know, you go through that, and then on your own time, you are reading research articles, maybe going to conferences. And then I encourage people to, you know, produce case studies to document particular individuals that you're seeing patients, and then publish that case study. Now, it's not primary research, it's anecdotal, but it starts to give this groundswell of information for individuals to search out, to say, well, if my back hurts or if my shoulder hurts, what might it be and how can I help? And I have had extraordinary cases in my career, which I kind of sit back and scratch my head and think, you know, I'm a healthcare provider, but the concept and the idea of health is getting more and more blurry to me. What does it mean to be healthy? And that's right. what drives me forward because I still want to be curious.
Is there something like one particular session or a patient that you're particularly proud of what you've achieved with that patient?
Well, there's many, but I think one that comes to mind, yes, she came in with the right, she had on the right side of her body, she had about 50 to 70 seizures per day, upper and lower extremity, her neck would twist. And she had seen many people. And a doctor at UCLA referred her to me, and I examined her, and all I could do with her was rapidly move her eyes to one direction. And if I did that, I can stop her seizure. If I had her move to the other side, I could generate the seizure. Or if I had her think in a particular way, I could generate the seizure or stop the seizure. So then I sent her back for the therapy because it was conversion disorder. And she had, within about 3 weeks, she could now hold her grandchild without fear of dropping the child because she would have a seizure.
Amazing. And then you can improve somebody's life and quality of life.
And that's on a clinical side, but on a personal side, she didn't have the financial means to pay my bill. So she paid me in grapefruit. She lived about an hour and a half away, and she brought me, and she had fruit trees. And so she'd bring me big bags of fruit. And I felt like that was my way of giving back, God telling me, hey, you've done well, you know, it's okay. And I was very happy to help her.
Yeah, it's a great story. Thanks for sharing. Back to the future of the discipline, you know, where is the research leading? You know, we're talking about neurology, you're talking about, you know, new discoveries all the time. And is there a path already sort of visible and knowledgeable to the professionals in the industry? And then is like technology such as AI going to affect it in, you know, in any way possible?
Well, it's still, technology is going to impact it. A lot of chiropractors, and myself included, I use different forms of lasers for complementary treatment. There's decompression tables. But what fascinates me is the research deepening what happens within the brain when you get adjusted. And so the research is actually starting to show that getting a proper chiropractic manipulation has tremendous benefit effects. So, but having said that, technology in medicine is moving at exponential, but chiropractic is not, because we still have to put our hands on you. And so nothing's going to be able to replace, maybe AI could replace some sort of a robot to find where they wanted to adjust you. But I will be far removed from the planet when I think that happens.
Yeah.
Because it's a very personal, you know, hands-on profession. And I think part of the tension is going to be patients and populations in general. We live in a very microwave immediate society. We want relief now. And chiropractic is not really built for that kind of system. It's a repeated ongoing system. So to continue to improve your spinal health will improve your brain. Just like we brush our teeth twice a day, we don't brush our teeth because we have cavities. We brush our teeth because we want to prevent cavities. And we want to improve oral health for overall health. Same thing with chiropractic. A lot of times people just want to get adjusted when they're in pain, when in reality, it's a tune-up of your nervous system.
So it's a different mindset that you need to be having.
A little bit. Yeah.
Right. And lastly, you know, is there any compromise that you need to be prepared to make for this job?
Yes. If you work by yourself, that will be your spouse in the beginning. You are going, for the first probably 7 to 8 years, I worked probably 6 to 7 days a week getting systems in place. And so you're really dedicating a tremendous amount of time to getting your practice and maintaining your practice. And when you are involved with the public and you're dealing with people's discomforts and pain, you have to guard yourself against compassion fatigue, because after your 30th patient of the day, how are you feeling, Mrs. Jones? And she's complaining again. When you hear this year after year, decade after decade, you can start to get tired. And so you have to have something on the outside of your life which renews you and reestablishes a sense of self and get the energy back, because it's fatiguing. It's just tiring. It's a very physical job.
Physical, I can imagine. Oh, that's a good point. Anything else you would like to share?
I think that if there's any young people that are looking forward to it, to explore chiropractic as a mode of healthcare, I do believe that it's the most impactful thing that one human being can do to another, to improve the function of their spine, to improve the function of their nervous system, and then let their level of humanism to take off and direct it how they see it, not how I see it, but how that patient sees it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Edwards. I'd really appreciate it. And also thanks for all your insight and experience. And I will let you know if there's someone who has further questions or wants to become a chiropractor after.
Yes, absolutely.
After listening.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and you have a blessed rest of your day.
I like that your job can be the most impactful thing that one human being can do to another. That was Dr. Edwards, chiropractor in Los Angeles. If you'd like to listen to this episode again or more from the JobTales series, go to worldradio.ch/JobTales or search JobTales wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Laura Leoncini, and I'll be back next week for another episode of JobTales with a brand new guest, the same time, here next week on WRS.